Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, and I am so glad you tuned into this show today. I have information that is beyond vital for you to understand, and it reflects some of the things I do and how much I love to do this. What it reflects is uncovering another upcoming myth being shoved down the public's throat about cancer therapy. Now, we're all familiar with chemotherapy and radiation. Whether you know it or not, chemo and radiation have not proved to truly be effective. I think generally this audience and even the general public understands those therapies for cancer have failed. In oncology today, any of you with cancer, you're not going to get much argument out of your oncologists citing the statistics and pointing out that chemo and radiation don't really work. I think its day is almost over. But I'm doing this show today because we have another therapy for cancer coming down the pipe, and you're going to be receiving it, hearing about it, reading about it, having it touted as the new cure-all. It's called immunotherapy. And as I've consistently told you on this show years back, the advent and development of our understanding of genetics and genes and expression of genes and epigenetics are all going to fuel new medicines in many, many different areas. Well, one of the main areas you're going to see our understanding of genetics affect therapy is in cancer therapy. And we've got this concept now. You're going to read about it on the cover of Time magazine. Your first hint of it was when Angelina Jolie made the decision, counseled by her doctors, to remove her breasts because she had the BRCA genes. In other words, she had a bunch of genes whose genetics dictate higher possibility for getting cancer, and therefore she, in her decision, her personal decision, counseled by her doctors, made the wise choice to take and remove her breasts so she would, of course, forestall the disease. Now, this was one of our early and highly touted. I mean, she hit the cover of Time magazine with this. I think the same year she was Woman of the Year on the cover of Time magazine. I don't want to speculate if one produced the other or not, but bottom line is this is coming down the pipe. An offshoot of that is that when you have cancer, and again, if you have cancer, one thing that does work for a lot of people is cutting out the tumor. It's not a bad idea, because that tumor is a huge load to the immune system. And I can tell you, watching people over the years, that taking out that tumor when that tumor's small, before that tumor metastasizes, is a really good idea. So don't ever get it wrong. There's aspects of classic oncology that worked. One of them that didn't work was chemo. The other one that didn't work is radiation. They never really had data to support that. But if you have a breast tumor, a lung tumor, a tumor wherever, and you can have that taken out before it gets into the lymph, you better do that. Our problem with cancer since Nixon, remember President Nixon in the 70s, the war on cancer? Right? In the 60s, LBJ declared the war on poverty. In the 70s, Nixon declared the war on cancer. And of course, if you look at the statistics, whether you're talking cancer or anything else, we really haven't made that much of an inroad. We're not that much more successful when we treat metastatic disease. So once it spreads, we have the problems we had 50 years ago, bottom line. So along comes this new therapy called immunotherapy. Now, I'm calling this the myth of immunotherapy, the myth. Because what it comes down to is this. The problem with metastasis, and those of you doing these holistic models for cancer, going to these nice clinics, spending a ton of money because you know you need to make a move because classic oncology isn't going to work. Let me tell you, these immunotherapies aren't working either. But before I go there, let me tell you what immunotherapy is. Once the cancer cells metastasize, what they do is trick the immune system. And the way they trick the immune system, and of course, this is why now more people get their cancer profiled. A lot of people, after they have the tumor taken out, get the tumor sent to Guardant Lab or Tempest Lab or any of these big shot labs in the U.S. and abroad, and the tumor is basically read to see what its genetic markers are. Now, what that means is one of the ways a tumor will deceive whether it's the drug you're getting or whether it's the immune system itself. One of the ways cancer will deceive it is by putting these doorways, or what we call markers, on its cell membrane that will either put our immune system to sleep or neutralize the drug. One famous example of this is when women deal with estrogen-receptive breast cancer and they take tamoxifen. The concept is that the tamoxifen is going to block the estrogen receptor, and on that basis, the cancer is not going to grow and spread. Very standard treatment for any female diagnosed with an estrogen-receptive breast cancer. She's given tamoxifen or some analog of tamoxifen. This has been done for years. Guess what happens? I mean, I've seen this happen dozens of times. The tamoxifen works, and then lo and behold, the tumor metastasizes somewhere else, like the liver. And the question becomes, how could it metastasize to the liver when I've been on tamoxifen? And of course, when they take the tumor out of the liver and they biopsy it, you're told it's now resistant to tamoxifen. What did the tumor do? The tumor is supposed to still be affected by that drug or any other you were given. So why would the liver tumor that metastasized off the breast all of a sudden not be affected? Simply because it developed a way to send something to its membrane to block the action of the tamoxifen. So this is what tumors do. Once they're in the metastatic state, they think. And as they think, everything you throw at it, it develops a way to put another little doorway on its membrane that's going to interact with the drug you're giving it, the chemo drug, or I'll explain otherwise, and it neutralizes the drug that you threw at it. And this is the problem. Tumor cells think. They react to what you throw at them. And of course, they do it by checking in to their DNA and flipping genes around. In other words, turning on genes and turning off genes so that they can adapt in a successful way to their environment. The failure of chemo, I'm just citing tamoxifen as one example, is because these cancer cells will think. They will outthink the drug that's being given. And so what does everybody know cancer is then? You have the tumor, you cut it out, you pray that it hasn't spread through the body, then you find out it's metastasized, then they start hitting you with heavy chemo, and within a year or two or three, you've been hit with a multitude of chemo drugs because the cancer cell keeps outthinking the drug. Outthinking the drug, meaning it keeps going into its gene box and turning on genes that will cause markers or compounds built into the membrane of the tumor cell to interact with the drug and neutralize the drug. Now, that's the sad story of how we treat cancer today, after it metastasizes. As I said before that, hope you can find the tumor when it's small and get it out when it's small and forget about it and be told, your tumor, we caught it early, it was stage zero, don't worry about it. You have an extremely low possibility that you'll ever see a metastatic state. That's where tumors have been effectively dealt with. That's where oncology has done very well. Okay. So as I said, I think generally you're going to start to see oncology fail, or they're going to start to argue less in a very short period of time. Of course, I think they're going to have to work the financial end of this out, insurance-wise, etc. But I know that the next wave coming will be the cancer patient being told they have a metastasis, but they're not going to go to chemo and radiation because of side effects, because studies now, you'll see, these studies that were supposed to work are now going to be deemed ineffective. I mean, that is a laugh. They were ineffective 20 or 30 years ago, but now it's going to be admitted, or at least glossed over, and we're going to get into immunotherapy. Now, what does that mean? Immunotherapy, which is going on presently today on a multitude of levels, utilizes this phenomenon whereby the cancer cell has a marker on it that will bind with an immune system cell. For instance, your T8 cells, your killer T cells, are critical immune system warriors that orchestrate the death of the cancer cell. And the killer T cell is going to have a compound on it. I want you to think of it like a finger. It's going to have a finger sticking out of the membrane of its cell. And that finger is going to end up fitting perfectly into a place it shouldn't go. And that place it shouldn't go is into a receptor site on a cancer cell. What a cancer cell will do is take a look at that finger that's sticking out of the membrane. You know, I'm simplifying it, obviously. That finger that's sticking out of the membrane of the immune system cell, of the killer T cell, the T8 cell. And that cancer cell will make a hole in its membrane or a receptor for that finger. And once the finger of the immune system cell binds into the receptor site that the cancer cell put there, that the cancer cell, going into its own gene bank, flipped things around to produce, the T cell is neutralized. The T cell, your immune system cell, the cell your body depends upon to eat that cancer cell, and if left unimpeded, will destroy your cancer. That T cell sticks its finger into this trap produced by gene alteration or gene expression in the cancer cell, multiplying at an infinitely faster rate, and at much faster rate than your cell. So you see, you got to remember this. Cancer cells are cancer cells because they don't go through the full cell cycle. They replicate, and they're done prematurely. So they replicate if they're fed, and this will be my point in a moment. They replicate much more quickly. So if you look at two cells, one that replicates slow, and the other that replicates infinitely faster, which one is going to be able to stay ahead in the genetic chess game? And that's the problem. The cancer cell is always going to win. You can't play genetics with a genetic chess game with a cancer cell, no more than you can play it with a bacterial cell. That's why we have bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics and growing rapidly today. And that's why we have the same thing going on in cancer. But you will not be told this. The idea today again, is to find that receptor site on the cancer cell that's just waiting for the finger of the immune system cell to insert and make a drug to block the insertion. Now, if you make a drug to block the insertion, what are you and how do you benefit? Well, your immune system cells then are revitalized. Or if we can genetically engineer the killer cells to not even have that marker or to have that marker shut off. Well, now it's one up for us and one less for the cancer cell. Now, that's immunotherapy in a nutshell. And it sounds good. And it can produce a remission. And it may have a place. But it's never going to get to a cure. Now, yeah, they're going to throw up cures in mice and the rest of it. But the bottom line is this. It's being competed with in a very serious way, in the same way that bacteria compete with antibiotics. And again, the cancer industry now touting this therapy, throwing billions of dollars into it. I mean, I watch it every week. I watch it with cancer patients. I get involved. I listen to scientists, immunogeneticists, who get excited about these things. And then you watch your patients die anyway. Now, yeah, you might want to have life extended. Certainly you would. And certainly you have to be hesitant to criticize on a certain level. But here's the truth. And maybe it's not the sad truth. Maybe it's the beautiful truth. Either way, it's the truth. The cancer cell thinks. So you can do a particular therapy to block one of its targets, one of its cell receptors. You can block it, but it'll produce another one. And then you'll be back in the same problem. So if you've got a receptor on a cancer cell that's going to put the immune system to a sleep, and you block that, however you do it, genetically or with a drug, what the cancer cell is going to do, what they know it does, is produce another marker. And then you have the same problem. Any time you're trying to compete. Now, you know, I've been saying this for a long time. Immunotherapy, unknown perhaps to you, has been around for quite a while. It's been in the works for at least 5-10 years. But if you study it, you understand that the genius of the cancer cell is its adaptability. You have to understand that the cancer you have was produced out of an unbelievable resilience on behalf of the human cell to adapt to a toxic environment. So you're already dealing with a heavyweight, veteran, seasoned professional fighter. And it knows how to think. And if you look at it that way, you're going to understand you're in a losing battle by coming up with high, complicated, lengthy, extremely complex anti-cancer mechanisms akin to immunotherapy when you're fighting a seasoned professional heavyweight that knows how to dip into its toolbox and get and beat you to the punch every time. Now, where have we seen this before? We've seen this with bacterias. We've seen it with viruses. The more you hit them, the more they think. So immunotherapy and this insertion into these entrapment points on the cancer cell is competed with by the fact that the cancer cell will pop up with another one. If you get to the website, and again, you must get to the website, straighttalk.cc. You must get to the website. I put 3 articles on today. You must get to the website an hour or two from now because I'm going to do the more complicated version of this show. Not complicated, but the more in-depth version of this show. Hopefully you'll find it simple enough to understand. But if you're on the website now, great. If not, get there. That's straighttalk.cc. And I'm going to introduce now a colleague of mine, Dr. Thomas Seyfried. He's got a book out. You have to get this book, Cancer as a Metabolic Disease. There is a YouTube clip I put on, and I want you to take special note. It's a YouTube clip. It's on the site. It's 56 minutes. I want you, if you have any interest in this, and if you don't, get interested, listen to this guy talk. He's a biochemist at a Boston college. He's got a master's degree in genetics. He is a heavyweight guy. He understands the stupidity of immunotherapy. He understands the stupidity of chemo. He understands the stupidity of radiation. This is a guy that takes what we call the Warburg effect and extends it into the understanding that if you can, through training, bring your blood sugars down to, say, 50 or 60 by going into ketosis, you will starve the cancer cell of the one thing it's got to have to grow, and that's sugar, glucose. And if you're living like most of us, with your glucose day to day at 100, 110, 120. Worse yet, if you're semi-diabetic, which most people are, hear my shows on diabetes to understand what I mean by that. Worse yet, if you've got a tumor and you've metastasized and you haven't made sure you've brought your blood glucose on the average down to, say, 60, top 70. If you haven't learned to live in ketosis, this is a lot I'll get into in the show, in the follow-up show, you're going to keep growing that tumor. Because as Seyfried's pointing out, cancer is a metabolic disease. It's not a genetic disease. And this is a fundamental flaw in the way it's going to be approached for the next 10 to 20 years. You, the American public, the world, are being sold another load of baloney. And yes, I guess we can clap. And I say this seriously because immunotherapies are less toxic than chemo and radiation. But they're still barking up the wrong tree. They're digging a ditch in the wrong backyard. They are barking up the wrong tree. This chemist is going to make that clear to you with some alternatives that should interest you. I'll get into these in the next segment. That being said, when you listen, if you can listen, that's on the website, straighttalk.cc. Listen to the 56 minutes, and about midway into it, Dr. Seyfried is going to say that all the epigenetic changes are downstream. Please remember that sentence. The epigenetic changes are downstream. Go on the site when you have a chance. Listen to it. It's a fascinating interview. He's going to make a statement. The epigenetic changes are downstream. And we have to understand this about cancer and genetics, in that by the time the genetics of the cancer cell has mutated to combat the chemo or the immunotherapy or your environment or whatever, by the time the cancer cell has mutated its genetics, has expressed formerly unexpressed genes, by the time it's played around with its gene bank, that's in response to changes that we have to discover, that we have to study, that should be under our control, that we have to understand. If we wait until we see genetic expression and then try to alter that genetic expression without fighting the progenitors of it, we've made a mistake. I understand that's a complicated statement. Listen to the show. Listen to him make the statement. These epigenetic changes are downstream. He's basically saying by the time you're spending your time, your money, your grant money, your research, your career, investigating how to flip genes around to combat the cancer's genetic approach, you've already weighed in way too late. Cancer, he's saying, is a metabolic disease. He's going to make an argument for fasting. He's going to talk about autophagy, something I'm going to be getting into in the second half of the show. That will be on the site in about 90 minutes. I've got to get into this a lot more for the audience. Those of you first time listening, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Every Saturday on K-Bright, 10 to 10:30, I try to uncover what needs to be uncovered to give it to you straight, lest not you be deceived. And it's not really a finger to point at anybody. Scientists are good people. Medical doctors are good people. Too often they are pointed in the wrong direction. Too often medical doctors are simply basically fulfilling standards of care thought out by their seniors, by their elders. And they're kind of like soldiers at the front line. They're just given the job to do. And the public sometimes mistakes them as the generals. Medical doctors are not the generals. The medical doctors you meet that treat you are being told what to do. Sometimes what they're being told is very biased. That's why you have to go to the scientists. Dr. Seyfried's a scientist. Get his book, Curing Cancer as a Metabolic Disease. At least listen to this YouTube and remember his comment about epigenetics. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. That's my office. Any of you out there in health land, lost and spinning, that need to get on the right track, give my office a call. Do it today, not later, not next year. Do it now. We'll see you next week. Okay, part two. You're on the website now. Fortunately, you're on the website. I've got so much to talk about in the second half of this show. Glad you're here. Glad you're on. You got to get this book. You got to read it. If you're not a scientist, you'll understand it. You'll get the gist of it. Listen hard to this show today. All right, we got a lot to cover. First of all, okay, your bodies, our bodies, the human condition, uses glucose, sugars, to go into a process called glycolysis. This occurs in the cell. On picture number 9, I put just to actually do picture number 10. There's glycolysis. Glucose goes to glucose 6-phosphate, to fructose 6-phosphate. Every biology student, even in grammar school, has to memorize this stuff. Point is, glucose is utilized by our cells to become a molecule called pyruvate. The pyruvate then is taken and thrown into something called the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. I put there on picture 11, the Krebs or citric acid cycle. And the pyruvate is converted to what we call acetyl-CoA, and that produces this rigmarole called the Krebs cycle. And then as that glucose molecule made to pyruvate, made into acetyl-CoA, goes round and round in what we call the Krebs cycle. Now we're in the mitochondrion, so this is this mitochondrion part. It's just an organelle in each cell called the mitochondrion. Everybody hears about this, how the mitochondrion is the new thing today, how when it breaks down, you get sick, and how we're going to go in there and make sure it doesn't break down. It's just such nonsense, and I'll explain why later. I want you guys to understand, in the end, just as Seyfried in the YouTube clip is gonna tell us, it comes down to getting healthy. I'm not saying it's not good to do a little immunotherapy and to do drugs when you need to do the drugs, but you're not going to get cure unless you get healthy. Every single time we come up with some big new thing we tout, it comes down to getting healthy. And if you don't understand this, you're going to get snowflaked. you're going to get terribly deceived by the medical community, by the scientific community. And I'll give you other examples today. But here's the point. Glucose goes into glycolysis, which is in the cytoplasm of the cell. The pyruvate that's produced gets made to acetyl-CoA. I think that's in the mitochondria. The acetyl-CoA in the mitochondria of the cell then goes into something called the Krebs cycle, and it pumps out nicotine adenine dinucleotide. That's NADH. And this NADH that's produced in the Krebs cycle then goes into a third place, and that's called the electron transport chain or oxidative phosphorylation. And in the electron transport chain, using the NADH produced in the Krebs cycle, which is produced by the utilization of glucose to pyruvate in glycolysis, this NADH is stripped of its protons. And its protons jump across a membrane in the mitochondria. And you end up with a lot of ATP. So out of glucose, you get ATP. Now that ATP, adenosine triphosphate, has this big group on it called phosphate, PO4. And the phosphate group is stripped of its phosphate groups. The ATP is stripped of its phosphate groups, and that energy that comes by breaking off the phosphate is used to drive all the chemical reactions of all the galaxies and all the universes of the human body, of all the other bodies. That's normal physiology. So again, very simple. You eat your food, you get your blood sugar, the sugar or glucose in the blood goes into the cell. Once it's into the cell, it's converted through glycolysis to pyruvate, then pyruvate's converted to acetyl-CoA. The acetyl-CoA goes into the Krebs cycle. This is in the mitochondria now. In the Krebs cycle, as you're utilizing and transforming the acetyl-CoA in and through the cycle, you're producing NADH. That NADH jumps over to the electron transport chain. It's stripped of its protons. Those protons are held across a membrane, and that differential between the energy buildup of those protons across the membrane starts to create a voltage differential, and then with a few other enormously complicated steps, all those protons drop to the other side of the fence, and ATP is generated. That ATP, then, that's produced per one molecule of glucose. I think you produce 34 or 38 ATP. It's very, very efficient. The human body knows how to take a molecule of glucose and get a lot of energy out of it. Once being done, that ATP has its phosphate groups taken away in chemical reactions, and that breakage of the phosphate group with its delta G's on the side of liberating a lot of energy, and that energy then is used to drive other chemical reactions, and the whole currency of the cell is driven off ATP. Right? Right till your graduating day in college chemistry or biology or molecular biology, you're studying ATP and genetics. It's all you basically study. Now, that's the way a normal cell utilizes energy. What a cancer cell does, and now this is called the Warburg effect. So what did I do? On page number 7, on picture 7, I put the Warburg effect. If you look to the Warburg effect, and Seyfried's going to talk about it, but I'll get to the nutshell. Cancer cells are weirdos. Okay. They don't use oxygen or glucose in the normal way. Because what I just described to you, glucose through glycolysis to Krebs cycle to the electron transport chain to a lot of ATP, what I just described to you only works in the presence of oxygen. to have oxidative phosphorylation. In other words, to make the electron transport chain work, to produce all that ATP, you need oxygen. Thus, humans, mammals, any organism that does this needs oxygen to live. Cancer cells like to exist without oxygen, predominantly. That is what Seyfried is calling the weakness to be exploited within the cancer cell. That it chooses a non-oxygen state, to which then it ferments the glucose. Now, I've actually never heard Seyfried say this. But I've understood it from other perspectives. And that is that it seems like there's a trade-off. The cancer cell is saying, I'm not going to produce as much ATP because I'm going to take glucose and ferment it. So fermentation is a process. Lots of bacteria do it and fungi do it and cancer cells do it. What they do is rather than throw their glucose, the glucose that they're fed, into the Krebs cycle electron transport chain, it utilizes the process of fermentation whereby it takes the glucose, converts it to pyruvate. That produces a little bit of ATP. I think it's two molecules of ATP for one molecule of glucose. So just think. Oxidatively, a normal cell gets 34 or 38 molecules. When you ferment, you only get two. So the cancer cell does something kind of stupid. We say it's a primitive cell. We say it exists like other cells did before the earth was abundant with oxygen. So the cancer cell is an anaerobic animal. This could be its potential weakness. It does something kind of energetically stupid. Instead of trying to get 34, 38 molecules, it only gets two of the energy currency of the cell. But as I've understood it outside this, one of the paybacks for doing that is that it can grow fast. It turns itself into a glucose hog. It's the guy that gets up in the morning and lives off 3 6-packs of Coca-Cola a day. It sticks its stinking head into cherry pie. It drinks maple syrup by the quart. Cancer cells a glucose hog, and if you feed it, if you make the glucose available, it'll just keep sucking glucose to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Even though it produces less ATP. So there's a trade-off for the cancer cell deciding to ferment. And that trade-off is it makes less ATP, but the trade-off on the side of benefit is it grows faster. We say there's something inherent in the metabolism of the cancer cell that greatly advises one not to give it sugar. Now, this is where Seyfried and others take off. And what he's saying is, you want to play with this genetically, and you know, later on in the show, I want to get into the genetics of all of this, at least as much as we can. Because you're going to be hearing, like I said, a lot about immunotherapy. I want you to be aware it's not going to work. It may buy you time. If your insurance will pay, it may buy you time. It will not cure. Do not be deceived by the next wave of crap coming down the pipe. You're going to be hearing a lot of crap. And I assure you, it's just starting and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. The immunogeneticists, the cancer market has just hit gold. They have hit gold once again, and I'll explain why. But they're barking up the wrong tree. Okay, you can do this with me, you guys that have been smart enough to get on the website. I want you to go to the site and get the YouTube clip up right now on fasting, autophagy, and cancer. I want you to go to 10 minutes. I want you to go to 10 minutes and 14 seconds. Go to 10 minutes and 15 seconds into the show. And let's listen to Dr. Seifried talk a little bit. At 10:25 into the show, into the YouTube clip, I want you to hear what he says, and then I'll take us elsewhere. But just listen to what he's saying at 10:25. So let's start at 10:15. Get yourself there. Go.
Supposedly, in one way or another, facilitating this abnormal phenotype. Or you can simply deprive the tumor cell of the fuels that it needs to ferment. And this is our strategy. It's a simple one. It's much more...
So let's go back again. Let's go back to 10 minutes. Let's go back to 10 minutes and 15 seconds. Take your time. Now just listen to him. There he is. You can either track down all these genetic mutations that are facilitating the cancer. Track down all these genetic mutations. I got to tell you guys, when I got hip to this years ago, that is exactly how I looked at it. That we were a bunch of idiots tracking down all these sequences of mutations. It didn't make sense. It wasn't respecting the molecule. It wasn't respecting the cancer cell's ability to continually throw, like a genetic chess game, all these different mutations out for our naive scientists to track, adapt to, make drugs for, only to find that the cancer cell's going to outwit it in the next chess move. Finally, I got a guy that's saying the same thing that's in the guts of cancer research. And again, this is why you should listen to this show I do. On every subject, I have an uncanny ability to detect horseshit in science. I have an uncanny ability to do it. I know how to smell garbage. And I smell it all the time. I smell it in chiropractic school. I smell it in holistic medicine. I smell it in Western medicine. I have an internal detector that tells me when somebody's barking up the wrong tree. And now I've got a guy. You know, Donald Kelly was doing this, who you hear me tout all the time, but not really in the same effective language. This is coming from really a guy that we can trust in the trenches with an understanding. So he's basically saying all this genetic manipulation, all these changes on behalf of the cancer cell to thwart the chemo or thwart the immune system are downstream changes. They don't affect the core. Now, let's hold that, and let's go to some of my pictures. Really want you to go to the pictures today. So important to get this in the pictorial form. So go to the pictures on my show today, and let's take a look. Hang on 1 second. I've got so many windows up here. I've kind of like lost something. Hang on, guys. Let me just get to my page. All right. Let's go to... All right, so you've got the Warburg effect. You've got the different cycles. You understand fermentation. Let's go to picture 22. Actually, do this. Go to picture number 21. Look at that. immunotherapy, using the body to fight cancer. You see? Then there's picture 20. Cancer immunotherapy by GeneTech. Then there's picture 19, the nice little cartoon. Here, take this out of Columbia University Medical Center. How does immunotherapy work? It's picture 19. There's a T cell. Your T cells, like your NK cells, they're the real cancer killers. And there's a tumor. You see the tumor? Well, they reversed my language that I used on the radio show, but it doesn't matter. You see how the tumor's got a little finger sticking out of it? That's a finger that cancer cell's producing. That could be any one of a number of markers. And you see how it fits perfectly into the T cell? So there's the T cell with this female receptor, we call it, right? The cave, the opening, the canal. There's a T cell with its canal or its opening. And there's the tumor with its finger sticking its orange head into the receptor site. What that means is your T cell gets deactivated. Thus, your tumor cells bind to the T cells to deactivate them. And then, of course, immunotherapy are drugs that can block tumor cells from deactivating T cells. Now, that's when they make the drug. They can also engineer. They can genetically re-engineer the T cell. So there's two ways to stop the cancer cell from blocking the T cell. Now, let's look at some of these markers. Let's go to picture 23. Look at picture 23. There's your tumor cell. There's your T cell, the big thing in the middle. Look at all the markers on the T cell that are integrally. Look at all the markers on the T cell that are integrally mixed in with markers on other immune system cells that are binding with the tumor cell. Hang on, guys. We're having an invasion of the Martians. Hang on one second. All right, so look at your T cells and look at all the markers on those T cells. CTLA-4, CD28, TCR, CD4OL, CD30, OX40. OX40. I was on the phone with an immunogeneticist down in Mexico doing stuff so cutting edge that he can't do it in the United States yet. And all his work is on the OX40. And to make a long story short, that OX40 receptor in the dendritic cell and the OX40 receptor in the T cell, that union is of great significance to this researcher, and all his time and money are going into synthesizing drugs to stand in the way and create blocks to that binding site. Because that block to that binding site then creates another block to another binding site, and all in all, the cancer cell then will fail to neutralize the T cell. If you look at the tumor and the T cell, you're going to see PD-L1 and PD-1. Your tumor is going to be genetically analyzed. When you get a metastasis into an organ site, they're going to finally biopsy and take that piece of flesh. They're going to send it to Guardant Lab or Tempus Lab, and you're going to get a printout that says your tumor cell has these markers on it. You may see a galactin-9 marker. You may see a PD-L1 marker. And what that PD-L1 marker means is there's a PD-1 receptor on the T cell. And if that PD-1 receptor binds with the PD-1 marker, you're going to have a neutralized T cell. The same thing with galactin-9. The bottom line is there are a multitude of receptor sites for the tumor cell to play with by sequencing for and genetically engineering antigens on its own surface to bind with those receptor sites on the T cell to neutralize them. And this is going on all over the place. It's going on between the T cell and the tumor. It's going on between the T cell and the dendrite, the T cell and the macrophage. There's so much of this going on. Most people are confused by what's going on. We don't even know what's going on. I mean, we do, but we don't. We are really chasing straws here. This stuff is complicated. It leads to nowhere. It's kind of like stopping crime in a ghetto. You can have more police and you can go after the drug dealers. You can build more education about the horror of drugs. You can do so many things. And you can spend the rest of your life. I mean, we kind of have, right? The war on poverty, the war on drugs. But really, if you look at the fundamentals behind it, it would be to go into those places and make sure kids got education. I mean, real education. So they had a choice. Because most people, if they have a choice, are going to choose to stay off drugs and into life itself because they have an option. And anyone that wants to argue that is as myopic as people here. We're barking up the wrong tree. And so you don't get results. So you take a look at immunogenetics then. You're not even hearing much about it. Our standard therapies are still with chemo and radiation. What's coming in with immunogenetics is really cutting edge. But they're barking up the wrong tree already. And this is going to be the future of cancer. And cancer therapy. Now, everyone's going to celebrate the fact that it's less toxic than chemo and radiation. And it is. But it still is toxic, quite toxic. You still have to take tons of steroids across the board. You just don't go in with alterations in your genome or with drugs that can affect your immune system and not expect an inflammatory response. You see, there are other immune system cells watching what you're doing. And when they see what happens, it initiates its own cascade of insanity. So the ones I've seen on the numbers of people I've seen always imply massive dosages of steroids. They are always touted as new and most cutting edge. And you're always given these optimistic statistics, so on and so forth. And it just spirals into failure long term, even if you get a temporary remission. This is the genetic approach to cancer. And this is contrasting shortly what Seyfried says is the metabolic approach to cancer. Now, again, that metabolic approach. Look at the metabolism of your cancer cell. When you see picture 3 there, cancer as a mitochondrial metabolic disease, well, you're talking about frayed metabolisms on two levels. If you go into the Krebs cycle, if you go into the electron transport chain and you figure out ways, okay, to slow it down or to block it, lots of lots of poisons in the atmosphere screw up electron transport. Mercury, for instance, mercury toxicity intercepts some segment in the electron transport chain. All sorts of chemicals do. Viruses do. Infections of all sorts. Basically, somewhere along the line, your mitochondrion's ability to repair itself, reproduce itself, to keep itself strong and sustained so you can have an efficient oxidative process breaks down. It breaks down with respect to its health, but one of the main ways, you're going to force a cell, compel a cell to go into a non-oxygen producing environment, is to deny it oxygen. That has to do with calcium. This is the thing about pHs. As pHs in the intercellular space go down towards a more acidic space, you get less oxygen into the cell. Acidity drives cancer. Now, sugar, issue two. One of the things that goes with the production of cancer, so cancer's already there now, is that it loves sugar. The more sugar that's available, the faster a metastatic tumor is going to grow. And that's your job, to make sure you don't get a metastasis. And the one way to ensure that the cancer will get very, very, very tricky is to keep feeding it sugar. Now, yeah, go paleo. Cut your sugar down. But I want to emphasize something. Paleo and ketosis aren't necessarily the same neighborhood. And that book, Keto for Cancer, is what you got to check out. And again, if they're suggesting some animal protein, like they got a picture of fish on it, what you have to understand is the one thing you don't want to do is bring your blood sugar higher than like 60 or 70. I think even 50. You want to bring very low states of blood sugar in, which of course calls to mind the possibility of the body not being able to handle that and all sorts of side effects that are very unpleasurable. And this is where you have to start to understand that the liver, if prompted by depriving the cell of glucose, the liver will take the essential fatty acids that you're eating or that you have stored on your body and convert them to ketones. The ketones will get dropped into the blood. They'll go to the cell, and the body will use the ketones right in the Krebs cycle. So you're doing two things then. You're pushing an aerobic electron transport chain existence, but you're doing it while keeping the blood sugar very low. And of course, this is what kills the cancer and allows your cells, the normal cells, to proliferate. That's the weak link among the oxygen thing, among the autonomic nervous thing. There are bombs you can throw at cancer, big bombs, making sure that that cancer cell is not being hit with sympathetic impulses because you're in the parasympathetic state. Making sure that the blood sugars are down very low because your body has shifted its metabolism and is comfortable enjoying a ketotic state. Making sure that the pHs in uncancered areas, right? We're dealing with metastasis. We're dealing with a rogue cancer cell or bunches of them. We're dealing with rogue maverick cells searching for new places to plant and grow. Don't give them an acidic environment to grow. This is how you approach cancer as a metabolic disease. The genetic approach is don't pay attention to all those things. Watch the cancer start to grow. Watch it start to get smart. Watch it start to deceive the immune system. by going into its genetic tool bag and playing around with markers, and then figure out how to synthesize drugs to neutralize those techniques. And that's what Seyfried is saying is epigenetic. It's downstream epigenetics. It's lame and dumb. Thank God someone's thinking, other than me. Other than me. Fasting, the water fast, not the juice fast, the water fast. Those of you who can do it, start with one day. Just one day, you only drink water. If you can't do that, just have one meal and then the rest of the day drink water. Push your body. Don't get sick doing it. Do it gradually until you can go 2 days on water, 3 days on water, a week on water, 2 weeks on water. This stuff really works, not just to create an environment that's very hostile to cancer, but just for your health. We're on high blood sugar existences. What they don't tell you to do is get yourself a glucose meter and measure your blood sugar all day. Even if you're up at 90 or 100, 110, 120, even for 5-6 hours a day, if your blood sugar is at 110, it's too high. If you take it down, you'll feel the benefits. Ketotic states feel good. And yeah, you have to do it gradually. You don't say, I'm going to be the wise guy that eats sugar all day, this, that, the other thing, and I'm just going to cold turkey crash it completely. Don't do that to yourself. If you've been chronically ill, you got to take your time. But you'll get there. You will get there. Water fasting has been used for thousands of years. Water fasting has been used very heavily. Check out a guy, Herbert Sheldon. Herbert Sheldon. He was an osteopath at the turn of the last century, 20s, 30s. He was a natural hygienist. He was the premier, preeminent water faster. He was the guy in the trenches with sick people trying to get on the other side with water fasts. It works. And I'm so excited now. Science, finally. Finally. Somebody's really, I know guys have before, but I'm not interested in that. The areas I love are when high-end chemists get into showing us the validity of ancient practices. That interface, to me, is the future of medicine. That interface is what America should understand, is where they should put their time, their money, their energy. That's where the NIH should be giving people money. To study stuff like that. And what annoys me, even disgusts me, is scientists, I listen to them. They're so completely, they're euphoric about this. This is research money for the next 10 to 20 years. There's going to be gazillions generated of something that's barking up the wrong tree. And we'll still be fighting the war on cancer. The war that was supposed to have ended in the 70s will be going on real strong in 2020, in 2030, and God knows what else. All right, guys, that's it for today. Maybe next week I'll do another show on this. There's so much more to say. So much more to say. Any of you sick, confused, lost? This is a no BS forum. Come into my office, take the counsel, do what I ask you to do. I'll contour it to you and get on it. There's big, heavy hitters in the name of health. It's not necessarily about herbs. It's not about all these cliff note therapies, these IV infusion therapies. There's so much baloney out there. It's wham, bam, slam, thank you, ma'am, medicine. I don't care if it's holistic or allopathic. It's wrong. And it really, really obscures the glory of God. to ignite mechanisms that are inherent within us, to control genetic expressions, to normalize physiologies is exciting. And we're not building an arsenal that way. 714-850-1007. Great to talk to you today. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.